Okay, and we are back. Glad to have you along with us tonight. This is a special report, part two, on the Morgellons hysteria, and it is actually well-founded. This is a frightful disorder, a syndrome. Nobody knows exactly what it is. What we do know about it is that it is horrible, and it has destroyed lives. It has taken some lives, at least via suicide. We don't know of anybody. At least I'm not sure. We'll find out from our guest who has died as a direct result of it, but it does appear to have that potential, given what we have already heard about it earlier in our first special report, which all of you can hear on the archives, of course, anytime you'd like. Just click on to it. I would urge you to do that. After we are finished tonight, we will have a total of 5 hours of radio time devoted to Morgellons, and all of that with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith, and we have two special guests tonight who will be joining Cliff and Jan and yours truly in about 1 hour. Are you there, Cliff?
Yes, Jeff. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Welcome back, and I guess I don't even need to ask how you are. I can probably guess. So let's just say hello to Jan Smith. Are you there, Jan? Hi, Jan. Hello, Jan. Is she there?
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. We got you. All
okay,
right.
Great.
Now, you two are, you've both exhibited some sunshine in your voices. I don't know how you do it, but it's, I guess, a testimony, a tribute to the human spirit and to the kind of people you two are. Because after last week's special, which I hope all of you listened to, it was June the 22nd in the archives, you will understand why I just made that statement. This is an incredible unknown. It is truly frightening. It is something that I don't see a quick solution for. We don't know if it's animal, vegetable, mineral, or anything else. We don't know what it is. We have ideas. It does appear to be silica or silicone based to some degree. We do know that it is almost indestructible. We've seen photos. And what we're going to do tonight is jump right back in this with Cliff and Jan and go through what you can see at the top of Rents.com in the guest section, the stunning photographs number one and the stunning photographs number two. And if memory serves, Jan's photos are number two and Cliff's and others are all in number one. So, but before we get to the photographs and so forth, Cliff, I don't want to go back and waste a lot of time on this, but let me just ask you, what was the result, the response of the first program we did last week?
It was marvelous, Jeff. There were an exceedingly large amount of hits on the Morgellons.org site. I received personally a great number of emails from people who were very supportive and a lot of people who had questions. I was happy to answer as many as my fingers could answer on the keyboard. It was just marvelous. The response was just wonderful.
Jan, how about you?
Yes, I pretty much get the same response, and a lot of people at the Linebusters chat board, which is kind of the hangout for a lot of people with this disease, are greatly encouraged that we're on here tonight and that we were on the last show. I mean, they're just very excited to know their cause is getting heard.
Well, we are. I am very honored and humbled to be able to do it, frankly. This is something that I think you two have been fighting. Cliff, as I remember, 6 years you've had it?
6 years, that's correct.
And I think, Jan, you've been suffering from this 8 years.
That's correct.
I don't know how you do it, but let me ask both of you just one preliminary question, and I'm going to go right back to the photographs. Cliff, the progress of the disease, the syndrome, this bizarre infection, not sure if that's the right word either, infestation, perhaps, has it reached a plateau? Does it continue to change and evolve over time? How is it now compared to what it was, say, after the first or even second year? You're in your sixth year now. What's different? Anything?
Yes, and that's a very, very good question that you've just asked, because it does need to be addressed. This disease, or this affliction, I'm with you on this, calling it a disease thing, this affliction has an uncanny ability to metamorphosize, to actually metastasize, to adapt itself to any and all environments that you would like to subject it to as a victim. And it does progress. It is completely different in its physiology at this point in time than it was when I first contracted it. However, it does it does seem to plateau after a certain point. And it's been my observation, and Jan and I have discussed this at some length, that it appears to reach after an initial period of time,
uh-huh.
and it goes through a series of stages that are actually quite chartable. It appears to reach a form of modus vivendi with its host, where mm-hmm. it is actually integrated itself in the best I can describe is in a symbiote form. It's integrated itself with you, and it comes to de facto agreement, don't mess with me, I won't mess with you. There, nonetheless, it still continues to grab territory, mm-hmm. but it's at a lower level, and it only responds aggressively at that point in time if you break the truce, if you will, and you attack it with chemical or physical methods, then all of a sudden it says, okay, buddy, the war's back on, and
really?
I'll tell you what, oh, big time. I believe Jan will probably back me up on this, and other people as well. This thing will respond to an attack absolutely instantly, and it will up you in spades.
Payback, big time.
Paybacks, big time.
Amazing. Now, okay, Jan, what is your thought on this? You've had 8 years to deal with this.
I find that I'm not sure if I'd describe it exactly the way Cliff
well, the
does.
The keyword Cliff used, I think, was symbiosis or a symbiotic relationship.
I mean, I definitely feel like I'm not alone in this. You know, it's like the monkey on my back started at 5 pounds and now it's 50 pounds, and it's been so gradual that I have had to notice all the different changes I've had to make in my own lifestyle to accommodate this, and they were so gradual that as I lost different abilities to be modal and all these other things,
mm-hmm.
I just didn't notice it because life kind of went on and adapted as it were.
I see.
But when I think back to the way I was before this started, I'm a whole different person.
How different? How are you physiologically different? Yes.
Yeah, physiologically different and mentally different. This is the strangest disease because there is not a day when I get out of bed where this isn't the first thing on my mind and the last thing before I go to bed.
God, what a horror. I'm sorry. That is just hideous. You live with this 25 hours a day. There's no
absolutely.
No
escape. It's just kind of overwhelming. It's like a presence that's with you all the time.
Now, I'm going to go a little bit further with this, if I may. Cliff, she just said, it's like a presence with you all the time. Now, I'm going to push into an area that some people might not like, but I'm going to go there anyway because I think it's fertile ground. I think all bets are off on this one. We need to go wherever we can. Is there in your mind, in your psyche, in your consciousness, a feeling, a sense, an awareness of another, I'm going to use this word, lowercase, intelligence that is not necessarily directing you, but is certainly conflicting with you at some point in the day or the week or the month?
Well, I would say in the day, in the week, in the month, 24/7, Jeff. 24/7.
So I'm being too conservative. It doesn't stop.
No, the fun never ends. We have to let the listeners understand that this entire affliction does not fit into any box whatsoever that we have ever had before to contain our afflictions. This thing is so out of the box that it's open season on just about any theorem that you want to put out there. And I personally feel that you are very close to being on the money.
I thank you for sending the story as well. It is in the database. If you click on the bottom link in the guest box, Morgellons data file, you'll see Cliff's article there. It's called The Language of Morgellons, Think Beyond the Box. Nothing, folks, fits. There's no overlay that fits even close with this. The kind, if you can quantify my use of the word intelligence, lowercase, or I'm going to have to go with uppercase because we're talking 24/7. When we come back, Cliff, if you can give us an idea of what this is like, is it kind of like if somebody's looking over your shoulder all the time? Is it something that is more of a consulting kind of a thing, a de facto consulting thing? I want to go here. I want to do this. And then there's some kind of a response. It's a very, very intriguing and absolutely frightening scenario that I present here. And I really appreciate you giving it a shot. And then we'll ask Jan for her opinion on this as well. Let's take a break. Come right back with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith, two of the bravest people I have ever had the honor of having on this program, as we continue our special report part two on the Morgellons syndrome. All right, let's get right back to our special report with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith. All right, Cliff, how are we going to try to explain to the folks out there what this awareness of another intelligence, and we're going to have to be liberal with our use of this word. How would you describe it? And it's probably not easy to do, but give it a shot if you would.
I sure will. And I'm going to say something first to set this up. One of the problems, one of the situations that we run into here politically in this particular environment when dealing with this disease is that there's a group of people afflicted who are very, very nervous to go where this disease or this affliction wants to take us. They're concerned about the reaction from the mainstream and some of the manifestations of this organism or this affliction make them extremely nervous when you try to describe them in actual terms, but I'm going to go there anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to go there anyway because as it is right now, the mainstream hasn't been doing us any favors, and some people love their slavery and others don't.
If I might say one quick thing, I am so disgusted with the stories that talk about delusional perceptions on the part of people who are afflicted with this. I cannot believe what I'm reading. The headlines, the mocking, all the rest of it. You folks have dealt with it for 14 years between you.
Yes.
It's terrible. It's truly a disgrace in what we call the mainstream journalism community. This has not been dealt with dignity, honesty, or anything close to it. And we're doing it here, and please go ahead.
Absolutely. And I have very little use for people. Well, I shouldn't say I have little use. I just don't understand the people that say, well, they hate us, they beat us, they kick us, they stomp us when we're down, so please do it some more. No, that's not how it is. It's time to stand up and say, this is what this thing is about, this is how it affects us, this is what it does to our lives, and if there's any delusion involved, it's in the mainstream medical community. They are delusional. I hope that they get counseling and medicine for their delusions, Jeff.
Well said. Well said.
Because those old boys got themselves a serious mental problem, I'm here to say.
Well, sooner or later, some of them are going to get a serious problem with Morgellons. And then they may not be so flip in their attitude.
Oh, absolutely. And it's my fondest hope that someone out there who has been victimized by the DOP syndrome has been making a list of all the different doctors and so-called experts that have...
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yep.
I've been over the years making these pontifications so that when the time comes, they can serve that up for dinner for them because they will be eating it.
Good job.
I
agree. All right. Okay, so let's talk about this awareness of another intelligence in your body.
This thing, and I can see the people right now going, oh, my God, he's going to say this, but I'm going to say it. This thing has an awareness. It isn't the kind of awareness that we would view as being an intelligence, but it has a direction, it has an agenda, it has a program. That's a good word to use, a program in the sense of a computer program, say.
Got it.
It has a raison d'être, as they say in French. This particular phenomenon, you can sense it. A victim can sense it. Now, I can sit and talk to you about it and try to get across to you what I mean. I know that you understand, but the average listener out there may not quite grasp where I'm coming with this. If you ever saw the television series Stargate, there's about the closest corollary I can come up with is the symbiote that lives in its host that they use on that. Now, it's not an active interface, but you're never alone, as Jan said. You are never alone, Jeff. You are always aware that this thing is with you. And it does have the ability to respond. Now, that's not all that unusual when you think about it, because in effect, we're being colonized. Just like an army comes in and colonizes a foreign country, just like an army of ants comes in and colonizes another colony of ants, it's not all that unusual. Your body's colonized by bacteria all the time. This particular colony, however, happens to be an imperial one, and it has an agenda.
That is brilliantly stated, and I think it's quite clear what you're saying and why you're saying it. I understand you thoroughly. Jan, would you like to get it? We have a break coming up in a minute, so let's hold on, Jan. I'll let you go at it right after the break. Cliff, is it something that it has its own program? It's symbiotic. It's in your body. It's not about to leave. It really gets pissed off when you try to do something about it and redoubles its efforts to make you, apparently, humble. It is not killing you yet. It has colonized you. It is sharing your body against your wishes. It has intent. Does it ever interfere with your ability to make a decision in the sense that you're actually fighting against some other kind of intelligence?
Personally, I would say yes. Personally, I would say now I have no, of course, proof of that.
That's fine. That's why I ask you. And everyone's different, and maybe other people won't feel that way, but you do, and that's crucial to the discussion here.
Yes.
It just boggles my mind, this whole thing, every time we talk. Okay. Are there good days and are there bad days, or are all the days bad?
There are good days and there are bad days. Some days are better than others, although there's a general curve down. Uh-huh. I suspect, and my intuition tells me on this, that this thing really actually is feeling its way as it goes.
Uh-huh.
When it first afflicts you...
It's learning more about Cliff Mickelson all the time?
Exactly. Bingo. You got it right on the nose. You're doing a great job, Jeff.
Well, I'm just here to ask questions. Thank you, Cliff.
You're doing a great job.
All right, stand by, all of you out there and our special guests here, and we'll be right back. All right, right back with you. Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith here. We have a three-hour program tonight. We'll have some special guests joining us after the top of the hour. All right, Jan, you heard Cliff talk about the awareness of an intelligence, an intelligent life form, because it is alive by some measure within his body. How would you describe it? Now, you've been at it 8 years.
I've been at it 8 years, and when you hear the phrase, the body electric, that always comes to mind with this creature, because I feel like this is an energy parasite, as well as something that's taking over your actual tissue. But it gives me the genuine sense that there's something on me that's a combination of an entity that's somewhere between a plant and an animal, if you will, that I can't describe because I've never come across anything like it before, but I definitely feel that it literally steals the energy from your body, and you're going around all the time with your 100-watt bulb at about 40, and it's getting the rest. That's the overall impression I get of this all the time, that it's literally stealing your energy. I know that there are a lot of crystalline-type fibers that run throughout my body, and one of the strange things that the lesions with this disease do is they communicate with each other, if you will. I've heard this from so many people, but if you do anything to one lesion, such as try to remove it or put some kind of medication on it that's unpleasant, the other lesions will start making pain from a different part of your body, and that's a really bizarre thing.
Say that again.
Yeah, If I had a lesion, for instance, on my wrist, and I was applying something to that lesion that was causing it irritation, if I had a lesion on my leg or on my shoulder, both of those two lesions would also activate at the same time and begin to hurt without touching them.
That's not only suggestive, but you're stating that there is some communication between these.
Yeah,
sites.
I am. I don't know if you would call it quorum sensing or if this stuff is literally hardwired together in our bodies with these fibers.
It could be all of the above.
Yeah.
We don't know. There is, in your mind, unquestionably then, some connectivity between these lesions, between these I don't want to call them organisms
I really
because
think so.
There's something else.
I would call it a network.
Okay. A network.
Yeah,
a network of occupation, a network of colonization, a network like a hive of bees, maybe.
Well, perhaps like a hive of bees, except that it's actually all one entity, and these are all different appendages of it all coming out and working in unison to kind of grab energy for the whole, pretty much.
And let me follow that. So the suggestion is there might be, forgive me, a queen bee sequestered somewhere in your body, and these smaller items that are erupting and causing trouble may be extensions serving that, or it may be one organism, if I can use that, which has tendrils going everywhere.
That's correct. In science, they found a microbe called Dictyostelium recently, and that has the ability to be a single-celled organism, like a minute amoeba, and they give it, it gives out chemical signals, and this entity can reform into different shapes and configurations and act as one unit. And this disease reminds me very much of that.
Okay, Cliff, any comment to that? And we're going to get to the pictures.
Well, I would say that it's also possible that these things are all, that these things all have the ability to function as microintegrated circuits, let's put it that way, where they communicate not only with each other as individuals, but as a whole. They are similar to the concept of the Trinity, if you will. And not only that, but it may go beyond just the particular colonized host. There may be levels of communication that actually extend out into the ether to other victims. In other words, we're dealing with a biomass that may have the ability to function on some level and communicate on some level of which we are only dimly aware,
right,
across the world.
Why not? We know about intent in human consciousness now more and more. We do know that human consciousness is linked and does communicate anywhere in the world. Why not? Why couldn't another organism so dispersed as this one be doing the same kind of thing with intent?
Yes.
It's something we don't know. What I think we should do at this point is summarize as succinctly as I can. And that is, we're dealing with something of an utterly unprecedented and dangerous nature. Something that destroys lives without necessarily destroying the lives to death. Although, again, we've had suicides. We don't know where this is going to go. We don't know, we really have no idea how far it has spread to date. It is on virtually every continent that I know of. Has it been reported from Australia, Cliff, for example?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
I have files from Australia. Jeff, if I may add something to what you just said there.
Please.
I believe that this organism, this creature, this form, may not really, truly realize the impact that it's having, or it's learning as it's going. I suspect that it's kind of like an elephant in the china shop when it first gets into the body, and its real purpose is not to destroy, but to assimilate.
To learn how to use its host with maximum efficiency without killing it.
Without killing it, and it actually is kind of clumsy at first, and then it tries to settle down into a little bit less of a high profile.
Hence your word symbiotic.
Yes.
Very well said. Anything else you want to say on that, and then we'll go to Jan. That's just a remarkable comment. Yes.
It's a deep rabbit hole, Jeff. I think Jan may be able to add something on that because she has some great insights.
Yes, Jan, please.
One of the things I will mention about the energy that has also been told to me by many people is that many people have like actual blue sparks that will fly out of their hands, being upwards of 4 inches long, if they come near anything metallic. And it has nothing to do with static electricity, and this is a totally unknown sort of an energy that they've seen coming out of their body. It's pretty frightening.
Blue sparks.
Blue sparks. Absolutely.
Visible blue sparks.
Yeah, very visible.
I've had that too.
Give me an example, Cliff. You put your hand near what?
Well,
an electrical appliance, a television, a computer, whatever.
Anything that's grounded. You know, and of course, you're tempted to write it off as just being a static charge, but after it happens, but it only happens for a period of months, and then it seems to stop. But it will happen intensively during that period of months. You get out of your car, the door handle nails you when you get out of the car. You go up to your house and touch the door handle. Anything like that, you touch your computer screen. Of course, you know, it's hard to say, well, is this static electricity or is it not? But no, there's something else happening there. And Jan's correct. It affects and integrates itself somehow in the body electric.
Okay, we are, and I've mentioned this so many times over the years, we are, contrary to popular and reflexive opinion, we are electrical beings first and chemical beings second. So that's crucial here. All right, we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. Our special report, part two on Morgellons. We don't know what it is. We do know there is a networking going on, a communicative side of this affliction. There is a colonization going on. Cliff made some very interesting comments, as has Jan, about the issue of the stages of the disease, how it changes. It comes in crashing around like an elephant in a china shop, learns, refines, interfaces more and more effectively, more insidiously, more successfully over time, and evolves or devolves into a syndrome that is miserably effective, ruthlessly efficient, and never-endingly agonizing for the victims of this, and they are victims of this this unknown issue. So many questions. Let's go now, if we can, Jan, to your pictures first. And when you look at the guests section at Rents.com, up at the top, you'll see Jan Smith, Morgellons victim and researcher, stunning photographs, number two.
Okay.
Click on stunning photographs. Number two,
okay, great.
And these are Jan Smith, copyright 2006. Now, we did talk about several of these last time, but just very quickly, Jan, are you able to see them now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. The first one, just to recap for our listeners who may have missed the first program, shows two separate items that Jan was able to extract with tweezers from one of the lesions. You see the anchor feet, tendrils, tentacles on them, those were down inside this lesion. Now, some warts have that kind of an appearance. They look almost like roots of a deformed wisdom tooth, for those of you not online. But this is not a virus. This is something else. Now, go ahead and let's move down the page as far as you'd like. Jan, count the pictures down, and we'll pick up kind of where we are in terms of our first program. Now, you had a breast lesion.
Yes, I have had an ongoing one. The thing about this is the original one has healed, and as soon as one heals in a certain area, there tend to be almost like taproots, satellite lesions occur around this same area, so that I'm believing that there is a network involved with the lesion, and if you disturb the lesion, the network will then grow in its periphery.
So as Cliff said, you get payback and then some.
Yeah, you do. I think of an ivy plant. When you cut one off at the surface, you get two or three more growing out of the pot. And
right,
it's kind
right.
of this kind of a thing.
Do you ever feel, and I just, as you look at the pictures, I've got to ask this question. Do you ever feel some days that your ability to maintain your individual integrity as a thinking person, as Jan Smith, is in jeopardy? Do you ever feel like you may not lose your mind, but lose your mind to at least partially to another intent, another intelligence?
I feel like I have lost a lot of the personal traits that I had before, as far as, you know, just the things that people develop through a lifetime of things like being fastidious and paying the bills on time. And, you know, having a desire to go and be with people.
Of course. Right.
There have been a lot of changes in my life that I am settling for. And the scary part is sometimes I seem satisfied with them, and I know I shouldn't be.
So this has somehow subverted your socialization.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of subverted my normal tendencies in my personality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I'm accommodating this stuff pretty much.
Right. Okay, breast lesion. Now, were these surface lesions pretty much? Do we know how deep they do? They go through all layers, all three layers of the skin, or are they...
Yes, I would say yes, because when I say lesion, one of the stunning things about these lesions is they're characterized as ulcers when you have them. They're not
right.
They're not a superficial lesion. I mean, they're a total full-blown ulcer that goes
okay.
all the way down to the lower levels of your skin.
And in all likelihood, beyond that.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the way these ulcers have typically come on me is a strand will come up from below my skin that may be a clear strand and...
And that's it? Nothing else? The skin is normal, but you'll see a strand?
Yeah, I'll see a strand come up. And this strand, what I would, in science, they would call it rolling circle replication. It means that there's something in this strand that will cause it to form a circle with itself.
Mm-hmm.
And once it has done that, it will keep wrapping around, and the lesion will form inside this. And as it will start as a very minute thing, and then it will keep growing and growing.
Wow. All right. Okay, the photographs are truly staggering to look at. You want to pick up some at some location and work our way down for a few minutes?
Sure.
If I might make a suggestion.
Okay.
The photograph with there it is, the glowing red gel.
Ah.
June 10th this year, just
right.
Taken June 10th. Now, glowing red gel. Some people say, those are microcapillaries. It's just blood.
Oh, well, you might say that it's just blood, but these things actually have the ability to glow almost in the dark. The material that they're made out of does not seem once it's hardened, it is not water-soluble. I believe that if you had a scab that was just composed of blood, you would be able to dissolve it. This is a polymer when it's hardened, and you would not be able to dissolve it with water.
Wow. All right, and you'll all see in these pictures the fibers. And we have, Cliff, were you able to work on any kind of a fiber index? Are you going to be able to get that done at some point? Because there are, I think, six different types, are there not?
There are six different types that we're aware of at this point.
Right. Okay, and you can see almost all of them in Jan's photos. They're for those of you not online, they look like little thin black hairs, but they're not. They're little fibers. Okay, go ahead, Jan, if you would, please. Just pick any picture you'd like, and let's talk about it.
Okay, well, the one up above that with the red fibers, all of these things came out of the, with the exception of the big callus, particles on top, all came out of the same lesion, and I primarily took these to show, all of the various things that can come out of one lesion. And
how did you pull them out? Tweezers?
Yeah, just a pair of tweezers.
Uh-huh.
Basically, the lesion that I have is large and ulcerous, and it has like a raised edge to it, which a lot of times will become very crusted with that yellow material that you
uh-huh.
see in the picture right there, and that is very easily removed, the yellow crusted material.
Is this on your rib cage or on the breast itself?
No, it's actually on my breast itself, on the top of it.
Uh-huh.
And in all the time that I've had this disease, I've only ever had any lesions on one side of my body, breast-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I have wondered almost, if this disease limits itself to one side of the body at a time, but that doesn't seem to hold true, but at least with my chest, both sides have not been affected, just one.
Oh, interesting. And how many lesions on the one side?
At this point, I probably have three or four on that one breast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I've got a couple on my hands, and right now that's all I have. I'm very grateful that I have as few as I do.
Blue fiber in red gel protoplasm is found in lesion on breast.
Right.
Blue fiber in red gel protoplasm. What is that about?
Well, if any of the normally you would think that if a scab came off of your skin, that there would be some blood that may ooze out. That would be a fluid.
Sure.
But under the scabs on my skin is this gel. It's already congealed, and a lot of times it has those fibers in it. And it's got quite a texture to it. It's not a weeping, oozing gel. It's like a gel.
Almost looks rubbery. Yeah, rubbery almost.
Yeah.
Is anyone able to help you and break this down and analyze it to see if there are or were functioning human blood cells in that mass?
You know, at this point, the research has been the biggest problem that we have. And I think it's probably a good time to speak to that. Dr. Weimar is, you know, doing his level best, but the way things are right now, we would like to be a big foundation with tons of money, but Dr. Weimar is a volunteer and he works a full-time job. And the amount of time that he can give us is, you know, somewhat limited, and he's doing everything he possibly can. But
right.
The funds are totally not there to do a lot of lab work.
Here's Warren Buffett giving 85% of his $44 billion to the Bill Gates Foundation, the Bush-Cheney-Halliburton administration pumping in. It'll be $1 trillion into Iraq before that ends, if it ever does end, and yet you can get no money, nothing.
No, there's not a grant on the horizon yet. I mean, the only things that have been given, are, as far as I know, are fairly small donations.
Right.
So, yeah, the government has failed us on this. I'll say that right out.
You're quite good at that.
I don't really care if I'm politically correct. That's how I feel about it.
Well, there's nothing wrong with telling the truth, and please don't ever stop.
They really have. They've dropped the ball, and I've had this for 8 years, and for all of those 8 years, the CDC has been getting the letters, and they have been getting people, you know, mm-hmm. saying to them, "We have something really bad. Will you help us?" The terrible part about this is there are families with children that have this, and as terrible as I feel on a daily basis, I cannot even imagine what it would be like to be a mother with this disease and trying to care for children with this disease. I don't even like to think about it. It's so terrible. And those people have been getting letters back from the CDC that say, go see your local physician. That is not helpful.
No. All right, we're just about out of time. Our first hour, we have two more hours to go. Base of macrofiber, formerly a hair. We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
Cliff did mention that last time. These fibers apparently have the ability, among many other things, to take over a hair follicle and begin to, well, they've actually thrown the hair out, and they become the hair. Is that about it, Cliff?
More or less. It's a colonization.
All right. Okay, we'll do that and continue our discussion and meet some special guests. Even as I say that, I'm reminded that what we have with us tonight, Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith, are about as special as it gets. So stand by and we'll be back. And we are back. Hour number two, our special report part two on the Morgellons nightmare. Jan Smith is with us. Cliff Mickelson is with us. Jan, let's go back to your pictures for a few minutes, and then we're going to go to our other special guests tonight and talk to them for a bit. But scrolling down, if we can, just count from the top. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and there we are. Base of microfiber, formerly a hair. Well, what's that about?
basically, that's looking at the hairs on your arms and noticing that you have some dark, thick hairs, which I guess can accompany a lot of dermatological illnesses. The hair follicle does have a tendency to pick up infections and whatnot. But
right.
After you pull these out and look at them, you realize that this isn't just a diseased hair. This is a hair that's got a life going of its own. It's not a hair anymore. It has, in fact, become some kind of entity of its own. And it appears to be doing just fine on your arm and has no intention of leaving. It's producing other fibers inside of it, and it has just become part of your body, essentially.
Now, this has been pulled out with tweezers?
Yes, this was pulled out with some tweezers.
Now, the curved part in the bottom, would that be where the hair follicle used to be?
Yes, it would. And what happens with these hair follicles is rather than being straight, and perpendicular to the hair, they'll bend around the corner, and they all have the same bend to them, and they kind of make a different appendage out of that.
Well, it also looks to me like it would be more durable and tougher to pull out.
Oh, yeah. These things are they're like a hard cord. But they do have some flexibility.
How long do these fibers grow?
I would say these particular fibers grow just about as long as a hair would grow, probably a little longer.
On your arm?
Yeah, on like the type of hair you would have on an arm.
Thicker or thinner?
Oh, a lot thicker.
And
very
it
noticeable,
looks
at, even with the naked eye.
It does look from the picture, the second picture, that the actual macro fiber itself is composed of a number of smaller fibers, correct?
Yes, they seem to grow filaments within this matrix that they put around the original hair,
uh-huh.
And they develop into this tougher cord that's got many fibers in it.
And the hair is gone.
The hair is somehow gone. I don't know if it's
uh-huh.
been just plain old assimilated into it.
Or killed off.
That would be my guess, that it just kind of gets eaten up by this other thing.
Oh, this is bizarre. How common in Morgellons is this kind of a syndrome? With the hair?
I think it's fairly common.
All right. Macrofiber, after a 30-second butane torch burn.
Right.
Results, crispy, but still there. And filaments, fibers, still visible.
Right. So I had done this experiment with a number of different types of fibers, and I
uh-huh.
wanted to try it with all the fibers. There are actually some other fibers that don't burn. This fiber did appear to burn. After I had it burned, as we go down to the next picture, I took the end of the flat end of the tweezers and I just
uh-huh.
crushed it as much as I possibly could,
right.
just to see if the whole thing had kind of disintegrated. And
uh-huh.
I did find, over to the right there, you'll see a small fiber.
Certainly
there,
is.
There was a very pliable, tough little fiber that was inside of this.
Oh, just amazing. Okay, and scrolling down, then you see all of you looking glowing gel exudate from lesions. There's more of this red gel.
Yes, if I could even describe to you the way it glows, it would just not seem like anything you would ever see on a human being's body.
It isn't
a play of light on this.
Uh-huh.
There are actual little particles of red glowing material suspended in this gel matrix, and it makes this red glowing gel.
Now, how could any scientist listening to this program not immediately want to jump into this and find out what the hell is going on? This is so bizarre. There's no bedrock to go consult. It just isn't. There's nothing there. This is all new.
Unfortunately, this is just a result of our medical system, and
mm-hmm.
I know particularly I have an HMO, and there's a process. And if we don't fit into the process and we don't have a code on the bill, then they're not really interested.
Tissue with glowing red gel removed from lesion and dyed with malachite green. Gel did not take the dye.
Part of it was the crusty tissue, and part of it had that red gel. And the red gel and the didn't take the dye. The malachite green is a really heavy green dye that's kind of equivalent to a drop of green food coloring. It
mm-hmm.
would, stain anything you can think of, but it didn't stain that protoplasmic red gel. It just rolled right off of there, and the stuff was still glowing.
Incredible. A novel attempt to heal an ulcerous lesion has yielded unexpected results. Pink crystals were formed on the 99 and 9/10 pure silver coin through the gauze. Pink crystals.
Yeah, and those pink crystals, well, let me start at the beginning because this was quite a strange experiment, but I I guess I do think out of the box.
Well, silver is a good thing to use, and
colloidal
silver and all that, just to see if you're going to get any response.
To someone about the merits
mm-hmm.
of pure silver
mm-hmm.
in regards to any kind of abrasion,
right.
And of course, they're always thinking in terms of killing all bacteria.
Correct.
And I'm not even sure if bacteria has been our main problem with this affliction.
Doesn't look like it.
I really don't think it has been,
mm-mm.
because our immune systems are not kicking in and doing things. They're just kind of leaving these alone. But my thought was, I had a big silver round, which is, a big coin, and I thought, well, I'm going to soak some gauze in some colloidal silver, I'm going to wrap the coin up, and I'm just going to tape it on there overnight and see what happens. I didn't know, but I've had the lesion for so long, I just figured it couldn't hurt
uh-huh.
to try.
No, I agree. And
so the next day when I got up, I found these particles stuck to the coin, and apparently the gel had gone right through the gauze and decided to, and these crystals formed on the coin. These were hard little crystals, and the only place they could have come from was that glowing gel. Mm-hmm.
And normally the glowing gel is pliable.
Normally the glowing gel is very pliable. I mean, it's kind of like a silicone cock. Mm-hmm. It's still at its soft part with these red particles just suspended in it.
Just amazing.
So when I got up and I saw these crystals, I was more than amazed.
Stunning.
I was just kind of flabbergasted that they, you know, even could possibly find a way through the gauze and get to the coin. But apparently there was some attraction there, and I don't know if it was something electrical or what it was, but it changed the whole structure of these glowing pieces of material.
Mm-hmm. All right, smaller particle from coin before being burned, and then the smaller burned particle from the coin. Now, that's after being burned?
So I took, the first picture is the two pink crystals removed from coin. So showed the upper picture show that that's actually the coin in the background with the crystals sticking to it.
Got it.
So I decided I would then take those two crystals and put them on a slide. And since I'd tried to burn just about everything else, I decided I'd burn these two. So I gave them a 30-second butane burn, and I had no idea what kind of results I was going to get with that.
You just blasted them, right?
Oh, yeah, 30 seconds of butane. This is, if anyone had noticed that picture earlier where we had the fiberglass, that was just a test run to see if the way I was burning these particles had a sufficient amount of heat to actually do them damage or if it was not functioning. But it did melt fiberglass, so I would say that it had a sufficient amount of heat to make some damage on these things.
Yep. Okay.
So the next picture down shows those same two particles. There was a little speck of burnt fiber just in front of the one on the left, and a little tiny piece hanging out of that one that turned into an orb. But the colors on these things didn't change at all.
How did one, that one, it didn't burn, it turned into a perfectly round orb, except for the top part, which is flat, and it looks like there's a tendril or a fiber, as it were, coming out of it, attached to it.
Yes.
This is, this is amazing. So what we're, the suggestion is, and what is the temperature of butane, Cliff Mickelson, do you know?
We believe the JAM was burning it at around 1,400 degrees. It's listed at 1,800 degrees, generally.
So it withstands at well over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
Absolutely. Anywhere between 1,400 and 1,000 and 2,000 degrees.
Question for you, Cliff. We got a break, then we'll answer it, and then meet our other special guests here next. Jan mentioned entire families. Children have this. I just can't even believe a child being afflicted with this. What do we think about vectoring? We talked a little bit about this last time. A family comes down with something. Is it person to person? It almost seems like it would have to be. Or the other possibility is biting insects.
Well, or see all of the above, Jeff.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, we do know it is being spread from person to person. We don't know how, but it may be all of the above. All the vectors that we know and understand through science and medical history. All right, back in a couple of minutes, and we'll meet some more folks and continue our conversation. All right, we're back. Two more very special people join us now to talk about this this nightmare, whatever it is. I'm going to be saying hello to Charles Holman and his wife, Cindy Casey. She is a registered nurse. Let me read the bios for you. We'll get that out of the way, then we can get right to business here. Charles Holman, husband of Cindy Casey, RN. His wife, Cindy, has Morgellons disease. His professional career has been divided between 10 years on the road as a musician and 20 years in the information technology sector. He is the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. And Cindy, his wife, is the coordinator of the Morgellons Research Foundation's Nursing Advisory Panel. Cindy has been an ICU nurse at a California Pacific Medical Center for the last 16 years. Much of that time, she was the charge nurse for the night shift and led very, very, very much an active life prior to Morgellons. She was a kayaker, involved in all kinds of water sports, deep sea fishing, you name it. But as the fatigue got worse, she found herself sleeping every hour she was off duty. Cindy believes this disease has been with her since 1997. Charles and Cindy were married in April of 2004, and 1 week after the wedding learned that she had Morgellons officially. She is now on medical leave of absence. In a bizarre coincidence, Charles recently was laid off his job that he had had for 17 years, giving him time to devote fully to Morgellons research. Welcome first to you, Cindy. Casey, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Again, I'm going to dispense with a how are you, because I think we have an idea. Charles Holman, are you there?
I am here, sir.
Pretty tough thing to find out 1 week after a wedding.
Well, yeah. And first off, I'd like to thank you for doing this, Jeff. You're helping a lot of people.
God, that's what I'm here for. Thank you. I'm glad you're both on the program. You got married. Did you talk about this with Cindy before the marriage? That
yes.
She had symptoms, but nobody knew what it was, right?
I begged her to go see a dermatologist. That's
uh-huh.
how ignorant I was of the whole situation.
Right.
And her comment was always the same with, they're just going to ask me why I'm stressed out, what's going on in my life, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it was, the story was the same
right.
throughout dermatology, everything we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they always want to offer antidepressants, you know. This woman was
they
not
They never
depressed.
Would look at the fibers.
Never,
they wouldn't.
Never
they wouldn't. Now, you had this 7 years at the time of your wedding to Charles.
Yes, I had.
Mm-hmm. And you had been fighting against the, and you're a medical professional, you're a health pro, and you could not get these people to take this seriously.
Right, absolutely, I could not. Once I brought my microscope with me to the dermatologist,
you took
when I first
you?
Found out, and they would not look, I was so surprised
uh-huh.
because I really went there thinking they would be excited about seeing something this bizarre
uh-huh.
and something we'd never seen before.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened?
I got a referral to a dermatologist that's also a psychiatrist that
uh-huh.
Deals with people who have delusions. I never made that appointment, though.
I'm glad.
Yeah. But I did try several other doctors, even doctors that worked at the hospital where
mm-hmm.
I work, and
mm-hmm.
I went to ID specialists, and they looked at it just... very briefly and said, this looks like a case of self-mutilation. And these were people that I had worked with and known for several years. This was devastating to me.
And they
me.
Looked you right in the eye and said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where were the lesions at this time?
Pretty much all over my body at that time. I was in such distress and so miserable that I was really desperate to find some medical help. And on my legs, all up and down my legs, mostly from my knees down to my feet and on my back and my arms.
God. You said that they would not even look at the fibers. You began pulling fibers with tweezers. How
mm-hmm.
long after you think you were initially infected with this? Any idea? Do you remember?
Well, I had in the beginning around in 1998,
uh-huh.
I believe it was, I had a lot of lesions on my face. And I remember pulling strange fibers, hair-like material that wasn't exactly a hair out of it then. However, that kind of went away for a few years, even though I still had profound fatigue.
Uh-huh.
But the facial lesions and scalp lesions went away for a while. So I just tried to ignore it. I thought, I'm not going to bring that up to the doctor because I thought that was weird and just try and go on, you know.
Well, Jeff, I think all your listeners are aware of the way Cliff has described how this thing is seemingly cyclical.
Yes.
It just comes and goes in these very interesting way.
At least it comes and goes in its observable configuration.
Exactly.
That's true.
Very good point.
Right. Go ahead, Cindy.
Those facial and scalp lesions actually, after about a year, disappeared. And it was probably 6 years after that
uh-huh.
they began to come back on my legs.
Now during the 6 years...
Mm-hmm.
Was there a point in time when you realized that others had this same kind of situation, or when was that time in your battle with this syndrome?
No, during that 6 years, I had no idea.
You
that
were
any,
alone. You had no one to talk to.
Right.
No one would listen, basically. You were alone with this.
Yes, and I had come to the... I'd pretty much given up on dermatologists and just hoped that I could deal with it on my own, but...
Well, one thing you have to realize, Jeff, until the year 2002, Cindy had not joined the world of the Internet. So
understand, okay. All right, and Charles, we have to take a break here, but very briefly, when did Morgellons really begin to have an internet presence? Do you remember?
I believe it was right around 2002 was the very first launch of the website.
Okay.
I may be a month or two off. But
so it's been 3-4 years, something.
Yeah. Definitely been out there for 4 years.
Okay. All right. Very good. Stand by. We'll come right back with more. Don't go away. This is an extremely important program. Maybe the most important program I've ever done. These two parts. Time will tell. We will be right back. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Charles Holman and his wife, Cindy Casey. She is an RN. Charles is the chairman, the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. This is a story that continues to absolutely stun many of our listeners. It staggers me, and those who have it and continue to coexist with it somehow are playing an ever more heroic role in bringing this information forward. And Cindy, you're right there in the forefront. You have had this now for, you think, 8 or 9 years,
mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Right.
Okay, you've heard what Cliff has said about it. You've heard, I think, much of what Jan has said about it. Would you like to elaborate or add anything to the issue of feeling like you're host to another kind of, and I'm using this word advisedly now, intelligence?
I heard part of Cliff and Jan's. I'm not sure if they mentioned some of the things that I've noticed once I begin to really look at the fibers in my that come out of my skin under the scope. I begin to look at other body fluids, and I have these fibers in every body fluid, in my nasal secretions, in the goo that comes out of the corner of my eyes, in my urine, and vaginal secretions, earwax even. I've looked at a lot of different, so I feel like this is throughout our bodies and systemic.
All right, this is very important. This is what we surmised early on, and now you are pretty much confirming all of that, because this is symptomatic of viral shedding. A virus will get in the body, replicate, go berserk, and shed at tremendous numbers through every body fluid. This is the same kind of profile. We've even talked about the possibility that it is in the brain itself. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
For me, that's been one of the very first thing that brought me to seek medical help was profound fatigue and inability to think. It just felt like I couldn't concentrate on anything, mm-hmm. and I couldn't mm-hmm. communicate as well as I used to. So changes like that took place, and I still struggle with that sometimes.
Charles, are you concerned about becoming afflicted with this syndrome?
Not at all. Cindy and I have been together for, I guess, over 6 years or somewhere mm-hmm. in that neighborhood, and mm-hmm. I don't seem to have any of the...
No symptoms, no evidence, no lesions, none of that.
I couldn't produce a fiber if I had to, Jeff.
This is encouraging. And certainly, on the other hand, a little confusing for people who
and
say,
I heard you talk briefly about it earlier, and it is interesting to point out that many of our registrants report entire families infected with this.
Okay.
Whether these are human-to-human and or simultaneous, a co-infection, if you will, we don't know yet. And this is what an epidemiology study will bring out, and hopefully the research that's ongoing at OSU will really further this information.
That's Oklahoma State University.
I'm sorry, yes, Oklahoma
mm-hmm.
State University.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so it does not mean necessarily if you are with someone who has it, you're going to get it. It's that simple. We've talked about insect vectoring as well. Some people mention lice. Mosquitoes certainly can't be ruled out. Any biting insect that bites and continues on and bites others, whether it be humans or animals. Do we have any cases in the organization, as far as you know, in the Morgellons Research Foundation, of confirmed animal infections?
That's very interesting. In fact, in Gainesville, Georgia, just a day before yesterday, we had an interview with one of our medical advisory board with one of the local veterinarians there.
Mm-hmm.
And he has seen, it's my understanding, at least 3 cases of this in pets. Of,
what kind of pets?
Mainly dogs, and I do believe I have heard incidents of mm-hmm. cats in other scenarios other than the one I'm speaking of.
In the canine cases, would there be lesions as well on the skin with fibers? Is that?
And I wish I could give you that data, but I really have not kept my eye close to that.
I mention this because there are veterinarians listening, and they need to be aware of this.
You know
they
what?
Need to be on the lookout for it.
And that's one of the issues that was just discussed recently with our medical advisory board is we really want to get veterinarians involved. There's a link on the Morgellons.org website. I think it says for all medical practitioners, and that includes you veterinarians, because I think there may be a big key there.
Anybody in the health industry at all needs
Absolutely.
To be on the lookout, because they're probably, I wouldn't be surprised if more people have this than the group that knows it has it.
Let's just think
and
about
they don't know.
If you think about the people that don't have internet access or that aren't willing to,
they're out there with these terrible lesions. They don't know what the hell they are, and they have nowhere to go. Their doctor, who they trust, says you go home or here's some SSRI antidepressants. Take these, you'll feel better, and that's it. So we have an official count of how many 5,000 infected.
We're getting close to 5,000.
Could be 50.
Well, that's households too. So that could include five members to one person. It's that's a very subjective number.
Is a reasonable guess anywhere from 25,000 to 100,000 at this point?
Let me just say it would not surprise me.
That's what,
It would not surprise me at all.
Looking at the world, we have cases of this. Now, you're talking about total cases of 5,000 around the world, or are you talking about United States cases?
Well, let me be clear about that. What we're talking about, Jeff, is total cases of people who on their own have seeked out, somehow stumbled upon to a Morgellons.org website and registered with a foundation that is sympathetic to their situation.
Got to think that that's an extreme minority of the number infected.
Exactly.
Just, yeah, I have to.
Exactly.
Wow.
And every time one of these little media blurbs that we do comes out, we see a rise in the registration numbers. And unfortunately, I'm not only the chairman, I'm also the web guy, and a lot of times I can't keep up with the updating.
So we understand that. Children infected, Cindy, what in the world can parents do with children, 2, 3, 4 years of age, 5, 6, that have this disease? What a horror.
This is a horrible thing. We've had registrants of infants, pretty much all ages of children. A lot of them have
infants, babies just a few months
babies,
old?
Babies even.
And does the mother have it?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. We also have, mothers who have given birth while they have this disease and have breastfed their babies, and the babies don't show any sign of it while the mother still has active open lesions.
And yet your research indicates that it could be expected to be in breast milk.
Not definitive on that.
I understand.
Congenital co-infection has really not been established.
But
that's one body fluid I've never tried. I don't have any children. So.
But it does point out one thing, Jeff, and that is, can a 2-year-old child be delusional?
Right. All right, good point. How about when we come back, Cindy, any fibers showing up yet in blood samples under microscope or microscopic evaluation? Okay, hold on. I'll be right back with more in just a few minutes. Hi, right back with you. Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith are standing by with us as well. We're talking with Charles Holman and his wife, Cindy Casey. She is an RN. Charles, of course, is the board chairman of the Morgellons Research Foundation. Cindy, what about blood tests? Anything in blood tests that can be of help?
To my knowledge, there have been no abnormalities in the blood. We do have hematologist, Dr. Ray Stricker, who's on the medical advisory
on the board, and nothing, nothing in blood tests, nothing. Now that's
maybe just a few subtle, like a subtle rise in eosinophils, but people generally don't have high white counts, and the blood seems the tests that have been done.
Now, no high white counts. That would suggest that the body's immune system, at least at that level, is not responsive. Or not aware that there is something going on.
Right. That's one of the puzzling parts of this.
It's also problematic with most medical professionals. You don't have a fever. You don't have a white count. What are you complaining about?
Must be delusional.
Man. All right. Charles, so tell me more. Where are we going with this? I mean, what do you've got a medical board put together. Do you have any possible successful liaison ahead with anybody in the, I hate to even bring it up, the Congress? And what are we going to do?
We have reached out and been received by several congressional people, and mainly I got to applaud Senator Dianne Feinstein because she has written a letter, which is, by the way, on the Morgellons.org website under the letters you can use category.
Okay.
She has written a letter to Julie Gerberding at the CDC, you know, more or less just saying, hey, I'm getting tired of the calls I'm getting about this Morgellons stuff. What are you people doing? And it's a very...
I hate to tell you, but she wrote to the wrong person.
Well...
Julie Gerberding is not going to do anything that she is not told to do or allowed to do. Nothing.
I can show you actually a trail of probably 4 years of the form letter that she sent out to everyone who's requested information.
There you
about
go.
It. And it's rather sad that her letter always directs us to the learning medical institutions, the teaching, you know, medical establishments.
And it's a BS brush-off is what
she
And,
of course,
getting.
Dermatologists.
Yeah, I know.
Which is just...
Several member, well, our medical advisory board has contacted her and received form letters. Even.
That's all you're going to get. What about the American Dermatological Society, if there is such a thing, or the, whatever national society there is for dermatologists? Can you possibly get a position at their next national seminar, get-together, convention?
That's actually on my list of things to do. I'm going to be joining up with the Dermatology Association of Dermatology Nurses and trying to get a booth there.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Back to the individual suffering, Cindy, that you have been involved with. Tell me about your life. You talk about brain. We call it brain fog. We can call it whatever. Has any protocol that you have tried made any substantial difference in any phase or form of this affliction?
A lot of things that I would try, different antibiotics would seem to be effective.
Such as, what, Doxy, Cipro, the big ones?
First I was on Rocephin, intramuscular injections, and there for a while that seemed to be effective, but then it wore off. After like a week and a half or so, I was right back in the same shape or worse.
Suggestive that the organisms, whatever they are, learned their
resistant.
Way around it, right?
Uh-huh. Possibly, we just don't know. But I've tried lots of other antibiotics, Cipro, doxycycline.
But square peg in a round hole, maybe, because these aren't bacteria as we know them.
Right. It just doesn't seem to respond.
Well, Jeff,
like bacteria.
The interesting part of the way medicine approaches this is, notwithstanding the DOP people, but the people who will listen tend to be Lyme doctors, And they try to treat for what they know, basically.
Uh-huh, sure.
And that's pretty much long course antibiotics or whatever they can get away with antibiotic wise anyway.
Right.
And
but
God
this
bless
is not
trying
a
to help. But
this is not a Lyme
thing.
Organism.
Well,
not
here's
at all.
The thing: you've got to know what you're shooting at. You know,
right.
That to know what kind of bullet to put in the gun.
That's what I said: square peg in a round
exactly.
hole.
Exactly. So yeah. That's I can't say enough for the doctors who are. Willing to listen to a Morgellons sufferer and not diss them. Actually listen to them and maybe even take a look. Those are great, great medical professionals.
And I get the feeling that they are too few and too far between.
Bingo.
Yes, and Jeff, if I could jump in here real
Please,
quick.
Please, Cliff, go ahead.
I would like to further validate what Cindy had to say. This thing does appear to be able to analyze whatever mode of attack you're using and come back around, do an end run around you. And that includes not only antibiotics, but other compounds as well. This thing has an amazing resilience. And it seems to be endemic that it's a 3 to 4 day period where you're just going, wow, I've got the silver bullet. And then all of a sudden, it's borged on you. It's morphed or done whatever it is it does. And it's back.
Do the antibiotics tend to address the lesions, per se, which may have some secondary bacterial infestation that the antibiotics are working on? Or do you actually think, both Cliff and Cindy, that the antibiotics initially may thwart or otherwise, I don't want to say disable, but obscure the energy of these organisms?
Gives it indigestion, maybe.
That's about it, huh?
Cindy, what do you think?
It's kind of been noticed that most people have not developed secondary infections like in the lesions, which is an odd thing.
Now that I was going to ask you
that maybe this whatever it could be is devouring other bacteria, because
yeah.
In a lot of the cultures, even the normal flora that should be found in the skin is
uh-huh.
not there or not as abundant as it should be.
That's correct, Jeff.
That's very important, too. Yeah.
Yes, and I can further back Cindy up on that one as well, and mm-hmm. I believe that Jan can, too. I have, in the past, completely tore myself up with just trying to get to these lesions and remove things. I mean, I have done some major surgery on myself.
Uh-huh.
I have never, in all the years that I have dealt with this, ever gotten a secondary infection. They don't happen.
Now, that's bizarre.
Same with me.
Jan?
Yeah, that right across the board.
Now, you would
I contend, Jeff, that's significant.
That's incredibly significant and important. Now, there are three people on this program tonight who have had Morgellons for 8, 9, and 6 years. So that's a lot of years. And not one secondarily infected lesion from anybody?
It doesn't matter if you take and you tear that lesion up and you got blood running down your face, you're not going to get an infection.
Mm-hmm.
That would suggest several things, one of which is that the Morgellons organisms are trying to keep the host healthy, or, as Cindy said, maybe they're eating. I think it was, who said it? Anyway, someone said it. Cindy, did you say it? They may be eating the bacteria?
Yeah, possibly.
Consuming the bacteria, cleaning the lesions so the host organism doesn't get severely ill? How bizarre would that be?
Well, I'll go you one better, Jeff, because you can cut yourself wide open pulling at this stuff, and it'll bleed like crazy, and then it will stop and I hate to use the word scab over, but close over
uh-huh.
With a rapidity that is just mind-boggling.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Who said mm-hmm?
Me, Cindy.
Cindy, tell us.
Yeah, I've had that same experience. As after you clean the fibers and pull the fibers out of the lesion, a film comes over it. It's not like a regular scab
at
all.
Not lymphatic fluid or anything else?
Not like normal lymphatic fluid. It's something that feels mm-hmm. doesn't really feel like a part of your body or normal healing process at all. It feels really alien.
When you say feels, are you talking about psychological or physically touch?
Both. Seems like both. Just touching it, it's like, ooh, that's, what is that? You know, it's just a hardened crustacean.
Huh.
And a lot of times with a lot of fibers wound up inside of it, and
uh-huh.
it will dry uh-huh. and scab over into a really hard thing that's difficult to get off.
If I can interject here, this
please,
is Jan.
Yes, Jan, go ahead.
What I also notice when these scabs come over this is that underneath these scabs, you will once again find these tentacled fibers starting to form. Oftentimes when they first come off, it will just look like bumps, and only as these lesions progress with the scabs do they get to be the long tentacles. But you will have those under a scab the next day.
Wow. So we have a unanimity. The lesions do not become infected, at least not to your knowledge. That's one. And two, the body seems to heal itself at an accelerated rate. How accelerated would that be, Cliff? What are we talking about, an extra 25% faster, 30, 40?
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and Cindy can disagree or agree with me if she wants, because she actually is better suited to or better qualified to make a judgment on that, but I'm going to say that it's not the body that's healing.
Right. It's not a healing process at all. It's, in fact...
It's damage control.
It feels worse, and sometimes within just a couple of hours after digging these fibers out, that film will be present, and the fibers have all grown back.
Good
Lord. They grow very quickly.
When you pull them out, they don't break, so these must be new fibers coming from some new matrix in there. Something.
I think we're producing new ones more constantly,
and
or
so,
I know I am.
So the organism involved here, theoretically, Cliff, could be something that is not visible and is creating these fibers out of the maybe the proteins, maybe the amino acids, maybe the minerals in the human body?
That's the $64,000 question, and we sure would like to know the answer to that one.
So yeah, let's get that somewhere. That's a good one.
I've thought of that.
The fibers themselves might be the byproduct of the actual organism, which could be sub-microscopic down to the nanoparticulate size.
Yes, well, I'm fond of saying that it actually assembles those fibers in the gel.
All right, and Charles, did you say something? I'm sorry.
I said your thought was exactly my first reaction to this, that it was some kind of byproduct from some kind of an organism.
And now that science has discovered what Royal Rife did in the 1930s, that there are tiny organisms smaller than viruses, scientists call them nanobacteria, and we have a whole other world of potentiality which we have to confront here. This is an absolutely mind-boggling story. Back with hour three of our part two special report on Morgellons, whatever it is, in just a few minutes. Okay, welcome back. Cliff Mickelson, Jan Smith, Charles Holman, and Cindy Casey are with us tonight. We're talking about Morgellons. What is it? What is it not? Do we know anything about what it is not? Cindy Casey, as a health pro that might help us, we're guessing, and we're doing a pretty good job, but do you know anything for sure that it is not? Is it not for sure a virus? Is it not for sure a bacterium as we know them?
That we don't know. We know that it's not any of the usual bacteria, the normal things you might expect that would cause skin lesions. We know it's not, it doesn't grow easily. They have never been able to grow it on any kind of fungal auger or bacterial auger that's been used so far. Now, I don't know that they've all been used, but lots of people have tried to culture it and are unable to. We really haven't ruled anything out. There have been some tests done to look for Calimbula, as some people thought that could be a possible cause. But that is one thing that we don't believe is the cause, because samples have been checked very closely for that, and it has not been present in lots of samples.
Is there anything in the medical literature, Cindy or Charles, that you two have come across that might be a distant relative of something like this?
Nothing really. In the beginning, we thought possibly fungal. The way the fibers grow kind of looks like some fungal hyphae that grow, but the sizes are way off. This is much larger than any known fungal hyphae.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Charles?
I just can't really say that we've really ruled out anything. I mean, Dr. Wymore at Oklahoma State University has done his dead level best, and God bless him. I mean, he's doing this really, you know, for no compensation and mm-hmm. out of the goodness of his
Another
heart.
Another American hero. Yeah,
he really
he's our
is.
Hero.
Yeah, I can't say enough about Dr. Wymore, but you know, he's a very open minded scientist and just the kind of guy you need to look for something that's quote unquote out of the box, and he's. You know, he's reticent to rule out anything because it's just too early in the game, and unfortunately, we've kind of bogged him down with a lot of media coverage and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I mean, it that takes away from the science, you can imagine. But I have all the faith in the world that Dr. Wymore is he's going to find something in what's coming up. Whether you know it or not, I don't know if this has been announced, but there is July the 1st, as a matter of fact, I believe is the beginning date of the epidemiological study that OSU is going to do on their own. And this will, you know, try to encompass all the registrants that we've had over the years with the MRF and all the registrants that they have accrued over the past few months. And we've combined the efforts, and we're sending all the registrants to the Oklahoma State University registration process so that they can, you know, really get in the middle of this thing. And I think that's going to show us a lot.
Okay, Cliff, any comments on this?
Yes, one thing. I would like to say that I'm getting an echo going here. I don't know if you're hearing it.
It's not too bad.
Okay. In the best of all possible worlds, if this affliction could be quantified as being a normal, run-of-the-mill bacteria, uh-huh, insect, what have you, uh-huh, that would be wonderful, because then we would not have to climb the mountain of mainstream incredulity or hostility. But it looks to me like the farther we delve into this, the more we have to move out of the box.
Completely agree. Jan, comment?
Basically, I think Cliff pretty much summed it up for me as well,
mm-hmm,
and me too.
What is the at the Morgellons org, Morgellons Research Foundation, what is the most common appeal from those afflicted that you get? Is there one theme that comes through them? All of the emails you get, the people who are registering, what is it that they more most likely are going to ask you for?
What is the cure? What is the treatment?
Where can I see a doctor that will believe me? We get that a lot.
And just so you'll know, Jeff, uh-huh, Cindy's action on doing this nursing advisory panel has just been incredible. She now has over 100 nurses who have reached out to this foundation.
Wow, terrific.
Now, like 75 of those are infected, but the remainders are just concerned nurses, mm-hmm, who want to help in any way they can.
Now you just said something else that opens another door. Is there any particular group of professionals who are showing a higher level of...
Nurses are the ones most frequently... registering with the foundation. And we don't know why.
And according to the last part, it was nursing outdoing teachers 3-1.
Teachers. School teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doesn't matter, elementary or secondary.
We just have them all in one group.
Pretty much all across the board, as I recall.
Okay, teachers and nurses, both coming into contact with...
Cindy has a point on this that I'd like her to make about nurses in general.
Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, this is just my opinion. We really don't know why this is. I think nurses are more apt to seek out research on their own and maybe turn to the Internet knowing, you know, that just because the doctor said they're crazy, that doctors are often wrong,
good,
you know.
Point. I was thinking of things like needle stick and that, but
we just really don't know. Mm-hmm. And also, some people aren't as apt to say what their occupation is. Where nurses have been through this abandonment by the medical world, and they're like, "I'm a nurse," and they still won't listen to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, amazing, mm-hmm, amazingly frustrating. Mm-hmm. So again, I want to go back again to our so-called elected political leaders. Charles, nobody has really, except Dianne Feinstein, done much of anything. And does she really care, or is she just trying to get some of the pressure off her back?
Well, you know, and that's point well taken. But
I don't mean to put her down because we need all the help we can get. But yeah, and if, uh-huh, the squeaky wheel, and if you guys make enough noise, and maybe she'll do something.
Right.
But there's so far no real leadership.
Well, quite frankly, just so you'll know, every senator and every congressman in this country has been notified by either myself or Mary Leto in, mm-hmm, a personal email,
mm-hmm,
explaining everything that's going on, basically, and inviting them to visit our website and, you know, please help. And that hasn't garnered just a whole lot of support, but then you have a letter like Feinstein wrote, and you feel good about, you know, maybe someone's listening.
Well, you know, whatever, it's a step, and we'll take it.
You know, the thing about all of it is, and I'm sure Cliff and Jan can attest to this, scientific research is not a cheap thing. It takes a lot of money. And to do what we need to do in looking for this organism, you know, we need all the financial support we can get.
I think part of your leverage is going to come from increased registrants. The more people who register, mm-hmm, with the Morgellons.org Research Foundation, the more pressure and leverage you're going to have.
Well, it's a known fact in the nonprofit world that most of your contributions come from internally.
Right.
And we got to talking about that today. If every registrant with this foundation sent in $1 a month, I think Dr. Wymore would be doing pretty well.
Well, let's ask them.
Yes.
Let's not wait for them to volunteer. I mean, hell, that's a gift, $1 a month. Come on, that's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd ask for 10.
That would garner us enough for maybe even another lab technician.
I think all of your registrants owe it to the all of the infected and all of the people who care to get involved, and then maybe others will as well. But I think $1 a month is more than come on, that's a joke.
How
about $12 for the year then? Let's get a check in the mail, a credit card, whatever.
Absolutely.
By the way, just so you'll know, if you're an Oklahoma State alumni or anything, you can actually donate directly to Oklahoma State's Morgellons Fund.
All right. Well,
this is really a nice fund because Randy has got it exempted from dean fees and all the normal processing.
Very
so
good.
Every bit of the money that goes to either the Morgellons Research Foundation or the Oklahoma State Morgellons Foundation Research Fund will go directly to Randy for all of his research.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Well, let's make sure that happens. Any final comment from you, Charles?
I tell you, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this show, Joe.
Oh, it's my...
You're giving hope to a lot of people, and that's what Cindy and I are all about, is that we know there's a lot of people out there suffering with this, and all we can offer at this time, I'm afraid, is hope.
All right, and Cindy, we'll come back and get a final comment from you in just a minute.
Okay.
And again, I do think that there are, I just, from what I know about journalism, news, and watching, not similar, but other issues where we don't know how many are infected, we have to extrapolate from what we do have in terms of statistics and data. I would suggest that there may be 50,000 or more, maybe even 100,000 people who have this issue right now around the world, at least. Maybe time will tell. Maybe it won't. But let's try and get everybody we can to register with the Morgellons.org Foundation. Be right back. Okay, we're back. Cindy Casey, registered nurse. Final comments from you, if you would, this visit. I hope to talk to both you and Charles again. I think we will as we cover this story. We're going to stay with it all the way. So.
I just want to thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to help to get the word out and then increase public awareness. So many lives have been destroyed and people are desperate out there, and I hope that some of our listeners tonight will hear us and know that they're not alone in this and contact the foundation.
I want to thank on behalf of an awful lot of people, both you and your husband Charles, for what you do and are doing and will continue to do. All I can do is be here to help if asked, so don't hesitate.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, Cindy. Good night,
Charles.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. And we are now back with Cliff and Jan Smith, Cliff Mickelson and Jan, in our first program, and you can hear it in the archives, June 22nd. This is our second special report on the nightmare of Morgellons, whatever it is. Jan, any comments to make on what Cindy and Charles had to contribute tonight? And it was a fine contribution.
Oh, I think it was great that they were on. And I don't even personally know Cindy, but I'm really impressed that she can corroborate all of the symptoms that Cliff and I have. I can really see that this runs across the board. And I'd also like to thank Cindy and Charles for being on. And they, too, are people that are doing all of this out of the goodness of their heart and are working tirelessly for no pay.
Right.
So thanks to them so much.
Indeed. Cliff?
Yes, I'm right there with Jan on that. I've still got that echo going. I'm not sure what that is.
So try and pull the receiver away from your speaking voice a little bit. Sometimes that helps.
Okay.
There we go.
One interesting thing I would like to add to what Cindy was saying. One of the things we've noticed is that this thing keys itself to the person's metabolism. If you get out and try to become active, say for instance you go out with a pick and a shovel, a ditch, this thing is going to knock you down. If you go in and you lay on your couch, it's going to leave you alone. It's very curious.
Almost as if it wants you to be at rest so it can do what it does better. Not to take your energy away from it.
Yes, yes. It's a little peeved about that.
Wow.
In fact, the more you sweat, the more you get out and work, the more it will begin to flare up. You'll start to get detritus from around the edges and on your nostrils. It just does not want you to be physical.
Huh. Just continues to amaze and perplex and stun the listener and myself at the top of the list. This other issue of the fibers having been found in literally every body fluid that Cindy was able to test is another thing that I think all of those interested in this subject need to keep in mind. For whatever reason, we don't understand the vectoring, but if it is being shed in body fluids, we need to keep, I think, that as a caution around the home, around other people, just because we don't know. We do not know.
That's correct.
If these individual items are in themselves infectious organisms and might be able to transmit vector or otherwise carry this disorder, this syndrome, onto somebody else, we don't know. Now, Jan, in our last visit, for those of you who didn't hear it, Jan had a knee replacement. Now, tell us about that again, if you would, Jan. That is really bizarre, but that underscores what Cindy said.
By and large, all of the cartilage from both of my knees is totally gone, not just partially gone and worn away, but totally gone. And when they opened the knee up to replace it, it was filled with fibers. Unfortunately,
fibers.
At that time, yeah. Because I'm considered DOP, delusions of parasitosis, even though I, you know, asked for a really good analysis of these fibers that came out of my knee, none was really done. They admitted that I had fibrosis. I realized that these were definitely the fibers from this disease, because once they sewed my leg and I wound up with a probably 6-inch incision, these fibers started growing out of the incision, and I wound up having more lesions on top of the scar.
God.
And I only just recently got rid of the last of those lesions on that leg.
Any connection at all between what we're dealing with tonight, Morgellons, and what they call fibrosis? Doesn't seem to be the same thing. I don't know how to define it. But fibrosis is not what Morgellons is. I don't want people to think that.
No. Well, basically, I would address that by saying when I have tried to burn Morgellons fibers, they don't burn. I would assume that if you tried to burn fibers that your body grew, they would certainly burn in some fashion.
Yeah, I agree. Do we know if these fibers qualify as being organic? Do they make the grade, or are they something else?
Well, we don't really know that for
organic, not in the sense that they were grown without pesticides, but organic in the sense that they're not mineral. They are more vegetable or animal, or what are they? We don't know.
I'd like to know exactly what their silicone content is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost reach out to the real far out there and just say, is this some sort of silicone-based life from someplace that we don't know? Of course, the prospect that someone has manufactured it in a biolab is always there. There's a prospect that it came from the heavens. We don't know.
Right. We don't. Cliff has a lot of pictures up at Rents.com. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a look at some of his. If you look at the guest section, look under Cliff Mickelson's name. You'll see stunning photographs number one. Click on that if you would. Get that page loaded. When we come back, we'll begin to walk down that page. We've looked at some of them, and the initial pictures are egregious enough. Lesions on hand, lesions on arm. Very, very unpleasant. But we'll be back and take a look at those and more. Okay, right back to our guests, Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith. All right, Cliff, let's take a look at these pictures. We did look at some of them last week as we had a little bit of time then, but the first three or four, for those of you who are online, are absolutely horrible. They're, I assume, your hand and your arm.
Well, no, we're going to credit Russell Altman for these three photos, the first three. They give you and give the viewer an idea of your general lesion.
Uh-huh.
This is what it looks like when it's in full flower.
And again, we got to underscore, Cliff, that these lesions are not secondarily infected with bacteria. You know of no one who's had that kind of a problem.
Never.
That's totally bizarre. Totally. Totally off the wall. Okay.
Oh, you got to love it.
Yeah, well, you've had it for 6 years, my friend. I don't know how you're still laughing, but...
Well, look at it this way, Jeff. We amuse each other.
Well, I think Morgellons has certainly met its match, and you too, and Cindy as well. You guys are just too tough for it. There are others who have not, unfortunately, I should say, been as resilient as you and have not been able to deal with it.
If I could add a little bit to that, I would say to those who are having tough times with this, take it one day at a time. Hey, you know, the sun came up, what more can you want? You take it one day at a time, folks.
That's great advice for not only dealing with Morgellons, but lots of things.
Right.
We have,
now, if we're looking at these photos. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we have the first three, and Russell Altman is credited with those. Okay.
Yes, he was kind enough to provide those for us. And you can get a general idea of what this will do when it's in its lesion stage. The fibers grow generally around the perimeter. If you look at photo 2B, or 1B, I'm sorry, you'll see that an open lesion there, and the fibers will come out around the edges. Those are the colored microfibers. There are also another form of fiber that will grow sometimes in the lesion, at other times on the edges, and that's called the macrofiber, which Jan was describing to us a little while ago, and she tied to the stake and burned for us. Let's scroll on down past...
Let me ask one other question. These lesions shown on the arm and the hand, are this about the same size as would appear anywhere else on the body?
They can vary. They can be
smaller. Smaller, bigger. They can be that big, though.
Yes. And another thing to remember is a lesion is just simply an open sore. There's lots of covered sores.
Got it.
So when... For every one of these open lesions, you're going to have what's called a callus in other places, which is actually a lesion that's tented over by the organism.
Now, that's fascinating. This is not a scabbed-over lesion. You say it's tented over by the organism, whatever Morgellons, whatever these fibers are. They build a webbing, a net, and
that's
cover
correct.
The lesion?
That's correct.
And
Absolutely.
Continue to do business as usual underneath.
Actually, they expand slowly around the edges in a circumferential manner.
Do we see any traditional scabbing of these lesions at all?
This particular organism is a master of disguise. It works with all the body processes, and it hijacks them and uses them for its own purposes. So you've got what look like a scab, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You've got what looks like hairs, but they're not. You've got what looks like bodily fluids, serum,
but it's not.
Exactly.
How amazing.
It's phenomenal.
It just gets weirder and weirder.
The darkest genius on the planet couldn't have come up with something like this. It is so diabolically perfect.
I'll agree with you. All right, the Owens Corning insulation on fiberglass, those pictures we did look at briefly, but if you want to touch on those.
Right, that's our control sample.
Right.
Let's scroll on down. You can see what he has done to the fiberglass.
Uh-huh.
And that was done as a control experiment. It relates to the set of photos number 2. So if the listeners will click on page 2 here.
Go on down to the bottom of the first page, take the link that says page 2, and we'll jump right up there. Okay, and there's a note at the top from researcher Jan Smith, who is with us as well.
Right, and Jan, please jump right in here anytime you want. You want to tell us what you've got here?
Sure. Basically, this is just debris that is removed from these open lesions that don't heal, and I wanted to add that I've had some of these lesions that are the size of a quarter, and I've actually seen on other people's websites lesions that are 2 inches in diameter. It's really horrifying. All of this,
amazing.
Yeah.
In the first picture, we have at 60 power, sparse fibers with many glowing red spots. That's
right.
Protoplasm-like gel again, yeah.
Right. This is that gel. This is the gel that comes out of these open lesions. It doesn't, some of it solidifies and some of it doesn't, but this is like a gel. Then it has the glowing red spots in it and just a few fibers. That particular piece of gel was connected to this next piece of tissue down, which was a hard piece of tissue that had a lot of the red gel just on top of it. It appeared to be a whole different type of tissue.
Huh. Can that be seen in a completely darkened room, or does it have to have a little light? Does it somehow pick up the ambient light and
yeah,
run with it?
I think it actually has to pick up just a touch of light, not a whole lot.
Fascinating.
On the third photo down, I've kind of started scraping some of that red gel off of this particular piece, and what I have found underneath is instead of this being tissue, this is just a total mass of fibers that are all interwoven with each other, and it's not really tissue at all. It's just a whole mass of fibers.
It's faux tissue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unbelievable. How did you do this? How did you scrape that down?
Actually, I did it under my microscope, and I just used the side of a pin and just kind of slid it alongside there and removed some of the tissue, and this was what was beneath it.
Amazing work. And how did you take the photographs?
I have a digital camera that I'm able to get a 200x magnification with, so I actually work with two microscopes. I work with a scientific microscope, and I usually place things on my slide so that when I do use my little digital, they'll be pretty much set up to work with. But I do a lot of things with magnifying glasses, and I spend a lot of time squinting.
Jan and I have too much fun, Jeff.
Well, thank goodness you have each other to laugh with. I can't imagine not.
We kicked this around somewhat. The idea to actually put the flame to this came from our good friend Randy Wymore over at OSU.
Right.
And we were kind of talking about that, and he brought it up. And so I got on the phone and talking with Jan. I said, hey, want to play with matches?
Yes, absolutely.
That's exactly what I said.
Well, we're talking about 1,200-degree matches.
You bet.
Wow, okay. Back in just a couple minutes as we continue our special report on Morgellons. Okay, and we're back. All right, let's take a look at these pictures again with Cliff Nicholson and Jan Smith. Okay, Jan, what's next? I see the one that we've talked about. It says fibrous plaque looks solid but is not glowing red gel on plaque. That's 60 power. And then we look at gel-like tissue, 60 power, connected to fiber tubes.
Right, and down on the bottom of that picture, on the lower left, there are these tubules that were connected from this jellied piece of fiber to that solid plaque. Never saw anything like that before, but I thought I'd make an image of that just as a point of reference.
Totally, again, science fiction-looking materialist.
Yeah.
Now, Cliff, to go back to you and just reiterate what you said, to revisit that scab thing. These are not lesions that scab over. The what appear to be scabs are solid matrices of these fibers. They actually build a tent, as you said, and cover the lesion. But they seem to be content with the open lesion, and they work with it like that. But these are not normal scabs.
No, they're not. This thing will tent over its lesion at times, but it also will break itself open, and is what the callus itself, we call it the callus. Many terms and stuff, doctors will mistake this as a scab, but it's not. That's what this is right here.
Jan, has there been any research done with ultraviolet light yet on these things?
Well, there was originally at Morgellons. They took a lot of the colored strands that were the red and blue ones, and they did determine that they fluoresce in ultraviolet light.
Okay. Did they fluoresce in the color that we know them as?
Yes, they did, and they they had quite an autofluorescence about them, so that was quite unexpected.
Oh, all right. Okay.
One of the ways that you can detect these is with a black light. You can find them all over the place.
Wow. All right, let's take a look at the next picture. Tip of fibrous plaque, 60 power probe with a needle. Air-dried plaque shows presence of fibrosis.
Yeah, if I had not probed it with the needle, it would have stayed remaining looking like it did a couple of photos up. There's just a mat.
I see.
But once I put the needle over that, I could see that all of those fibers were all interwoven, but I could separate them.
Mm-hmm.
So the next few pictures actually show the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. Look at those fibers. Tissue sample from fibrous plaque, 200 power, how fibers looked before using the flame. All right. These are the white fibers.
Those white fibers are a sample I pulled, and those were what I burned. I decided to do the before picture on that with
okay.
the 200X. That's
and
a,
then the after picture at 60X, fibrous
that was after
sample.
Right, that was a 30-second flame. And, I mean, these fibers are so tiny that when I use the butane flame that I have, it just engulfs these things.
We're talking 1,200 degrees here.
Yeah, I mean, it just totally engulfs these.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to burn it from different angles. It's like the whole thing is burning, but I actually do burn it from different angles just in case.
When you watched it, were you able to, you couldn't watch it under the microscope and burn it.
No,
so you couldn't see if it was actually burning or had taken flame. All you could do is look at it after the fact, correct?
Well, I removed the slide from my microscope, and I have a ceramic tile on my desk that I lay the slide on, and I could sort of view it, but I mean the whole thing was obscured with the flame,
uh-huh.
so I really couldn't tell until after the burn what it was doing.
And the first time you burned it and saw what was left afterward, which was virtually the whole thing, what did you think?
Virtually the whole thing and some slight melting and some slight singeing, and that was it. That I, you know, took some more pictures, which
uh-huh.
is the next one down at 200X,
uh-huh.
which shows these fine fibers that didn't get bothered at all. So then in the next photo down, I decided to burn it again for 30 more seconds because I couldn't believe my eyes, basically.
Right.
So the next sample down is that same piece that I burned 30 more seconds.
Gosh, it's incredible.
Yeah, it sure is. They could ride a meteor right into the planet, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. They sure could. Or be put on the outside of the space shuttle for reentry.
Mm-hmm. Or be in the center of the Earth.
That's right. Another possibility.
These fibers didn't get to a point where they would crumble. They get kind of more melted, little singed, but they weren't crumbly.
Have we been able to come up with any silica in fibers at all that science might make and try to expose them to the same burning flame or anything of a silicon nature?
Well, there are fibers that are silicon carbonate fibers, which are made industrially.
Right.
And we have not had the opportunity to do anything in a major lab that would show the real true results
okay.
of this. I have to admit most of my science here is, you know, kind of doing the best I can from my little house in New Hampshire.
Well,
and,
it's wonderful science, Jan. You've just,
well, thank
these,
you.
These pictures are just staggering in their implications.
I mean, this whole disease is just screaming for research.
Right, sure is. I still, as I said before last time, both of you, I think somewhere there are people who are working on this right now that we'll never know about, who probably know a lot more than we do.
We agree with that on many levels.
Maybe the same people who made them. I don't
yes, I hate to say that, but
want to go to that conclusion, but it is possible. All right, the next page of images, fireball at 10 power as found on lesion, fiber ball.
Right.
Fiber ball. It's a little like a little fuzz ball. Now, is that a needle I see there?
Yes, that's the very tip of a needle, so you can see that that's a minute piece of material.
Yeah, it is.
And it takes a really good close-up of that to even determine what that material is.
Huh.
So that's why I did the 200X photo. You can see in the lower left on that photo, there's a blue fiber entangled with that white ball fiber.
There certainly is. I see it. Yeah. Wow. So you went from 10 power to 200 power, and that's the second picture is what Jan saw.
Right.
You can imagine a flame pretty much covers that thing with an even temperature. It's so small, the flame just engulfs it totally.
Yeah, I mean it's the size of a breadcrumb, really.
Okay, let's go to the next picture.
So that's just another shot of it at 60x. Those just happen to be the magnifications
right.
I have, but it gives you an overview of the size and the types of fibers that are kind of sticking out on the sides and whatnot.
This idea of colored fibers is very vexing. It's really weird. I don't know what your guess is. This is almost so weird we can't guess.
There's something very interesting about those fibers, and I've discussed this with people that are involved in research, and we have yet to be able to do a chromography on these. But the colors, Jeff, are odd. It's not the kind of color you would expect an organism to be able to manufacture out of the substances it would find within a carbon-based body.
Right, right.
There are some things in the marine world that have photosynthetic genes in them, and they have what they call Fi-Coble proteins, and they can produce red and blue pigmentation in marine life. And we had looked at that for quite a while, but just never made a connection.
Right, understand. Okay, very quickly, jump onto the next page. Just have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Big blue fiber at 10 power before burning. Big blue fiber sheds glowing material to reveal two red fibers flanking the blue fiber. 200 power before burning. And then one end of the big blue fiber at 200 power before burning.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was
the
natural
down.
Hook shape was part of the fiber.
Right.
But I thought that was kind of an interesting
sure
shape.
Sure is, yeah.
And if you go to the next picture down, this is after I have burned the fiber. Some of the parts have turned it an amber color. There's even a slight kind of an aqua green just beside some of the places that are burned. And this whole ball on the end that's dark is some kind of resinous material that has come out of this fiber and formed this ball.
The green and the blue I see in there, what in the world? This is truly out of a sci-fi novel.
It may be what not in this world.
Yep, exactly.
If I had only done this experiment once, I would wonder, but I've done it many times with those blue fibers, and the results remain the same.
Okay. We have just 2 minutes left. Let me get a final comment, Jan, from you tonight, and we'll be talking again in the future, but I want to thank you. I just am amazed at your resilience, your strength, both of you. And, Jan, thank you so much for being here, and thanks for all you've done and all you will continue to do to try to make this
whole
thing.
Well, everyone's entirely welcome.
So we'll see you again?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, very good.
Love to come back, Jeff. And I would hope maybe we can address the issue of insects and animals that are affected with this as well, because
Yes. We'll do that for sure, Cliff, and we'll also talk about DOP next time on the psychology of being rejected by the medical community and told that you're crazy or you're mentally deluded or God, I can't even imagine going to a doctor that you have known for a long time and having that doctor even suggest self-mutilation when someone has been suffering as you two and so many thousands of others have. It's just off the scale.
It's definitely a wake-up call.
I don't know if there's time, but I have a quick final thought on that. One of the things that I researched all along the way was why it seemed that the medical treatment that people were getting seemed to be of some help to the symptoms. And what I have found in my research and other people's research is that the actual medicine they're giving us contains an anti-helminthic. It contains a compound called piperazine. And it was originally found in 1953 to use as an anti-helminthic, which is for insects. And it works by pretty much stunning whatever it is that's moving in you and causing it to be immobile. And my big question is, why is that?
So piperazine or piperazine?
Right. Yeah, it's the main ingredient in almost every treatment that people are receiving from the doctor for DOP.
Very interesting. All right, well, we will see what happens. Thank you again, Jan.
Oh, thanks so much.
And thank you, Cliff.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, sir. We'll talk to you both again.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's the conclusion of our second program on the Nightmare of Morgellons. We'll be doing more in the coming weeks and months ahead. All right, lots to think about. Back in 21 hours. See you then.